Spring into deals with fresh savings at Lowe's. Right now, get four Stay Green or Premium 2-cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 35% off select major appliances and save $50 on every $500 you spend on select LG appliances. Shop in-store or online today. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 4/30. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate at Lowe's.com for more details or qualifying items. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Spring is in bloom, and so are casino thrills at BetMGM Casino. Play your favorite games like blackjack and roulette with a live dealer. Or check out our exclusive slots like MGM Grand Millions and The Wizard of Oz Over the Rainbow, only available at BetMGM Casino. Spin on spectacular slot favorites like Cash Eruption, 88 Fortunes, Mystery of the Lamp, Rake and Bacon, Cash Machine, Flintstones, and Squid Game from anywhere. Whether you're taking a walk or waiting for your train to come, you can enjoy the thrills of BetMGM Casino right from the palm of your hand. Download the BetMGM Casino app today and get a piece of the action. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. BetMGM.com for full terms. Games may vary by state. 21 years of age or older to wager. Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Movies and Booze. I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. 087-1400-106 is our WhatsApp number. Coming to you today from the Sugar Club. With thanks to our friends in Marks and Spencer's. We're joined on the stage by Brian Lloyd, Leslie Williams, and blushing bride Fionnuala Jones.
She's married. Yeah, but so, only 2 weeks, sorry.
So how did it go?
It was great. We had the best day ever. It was the last day of the really nice weather 2 weeks ago, so it was class.
Yeah.
Feels like age. It feels like even longer ago now. Thank God we're doing it again, so...
We're having
a second wedding in Cork. That's my destination wedding, West Cork.
Right. So are you legally married?
We're legally married now, so like...
Yeah, okay.
So the West Cork thing is just a farce, really. Like.
Okay. Well, no, it's a different jurisdiction, so...
True,
you know,
actually, yeah. Very true.
And so where did you get legally married?
We got legally married in City Hall, and then we went for dinner after in Fannell and Byrne, and they were great. And then it's kind of like Simpsons scene missing after that, because I had a lot of drinks, so... But we had a great day, I think, so...
Okay. And so does that mean you had to have two wedding outfits?
Yeah. Well, you didn't have to. Like, I mean, you're using the word have there liberally. But I am having two wedding outfits because why not? Why not, girls? You only do it once or sometimes twice. Thank you for the support. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, that was not an optimistic screen there. The City Hall outfit, is that different from the West Cork outfit?
Yeah. My City Hall outfit was something old. My Cork outfit is something new. Ooh. But it's just the way... I just saw two dresses that I liked, so I was like, right, fair enough.
But are they like your traditional wedding dress?
The first one is a vintage dress I found online. I think I talked about it before, talking about secondhand bridal and stuff like that. I just found it randomly online and I knew it would fit me. So I was like, right, I will just take a chance on this. And from the 80s, and I loved it. It was really nice.
So the one in West Cork...
Modern, contemporary bright. Oh, sorry, the numbers.
Yeah.
We're looking at 160, which I kept telling everyone. I was like, lovely, small, into... They were like, that's not small. I was like, okay. But I think I've just grown up with the way wedding numbers are really different now. But I think everyone...
Yeah.
It used to be like 200 was kind of the norm. And now between COVID and everything, everyone's scaling back. So it's like my nice little small wedding. And everyone was like, you've no concept of numbers because 160 people is... It's not small. Like, I was like, oh, okay.
Everybody here came to your wedding.
Five. Oh yeah,
five people in my wedding. Five.
Do you want to come?
Yeah.
Don't tell my husband.
Yeah. And so, is it like is the do in a hotel or?
Yeah, in West Cork.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you gonna give the name of
the hotel? Do you want my PPS number as well? Or?
No. Just one. I'm just being nosy.
No, we're getting married in Clonkilty. So. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very best nice. Well done. Okay.
Pudding.
Excellent.
Yeah,
so how's married life so far? Do you feel different? Now
everyone keeps asking me and I keep saying no and then I feel like that's the wrong answer because everyone's like, no, I did feel different. I felt it just like in myself.
No,
like,
you should feel the same because if you felt different, that would be kind of weird.
Yeah.
You're sort of together years though, aren't you?
I love this private interview of me, by the way. We're together 8 years. Sorry, yeah. Kane. It's in
we were together 15 years before we got married.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah,
it's all old hat. Like,
rushing into it.
Yeah.
And what does he do for a living?
Something with advertising.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Again, I should probably know that definitively, but anyway.
You see, you've still things to discover about each other. Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah, what is
truly.
Your job, actually? Well, actually, I rob banks. Right, so what movies are we talking about today?
The Accountant 2.
Oh, at long last.
Yeah, no, really, yeah, it is. Oh, it was no, like 8 years since the last one. Like, yeah. It was quite a bit of a hit. And then the other one is The Friend, which is an adaptation of a Sigrid Nunez novel.
Okay.
And I can just see the light drain out of your eyes the minute I said that. Yeah. I could just see it just like...
Yeah. Because is it people coping with the complexities of relationships?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a dog.
Yeah.
There's a dog involved. And every time there's a dog involved on a film, I think straight away emotional manipulation. That dog is either going to live or die by the end of this. And I'm going to be hanging on, hoping to Christ that this dog survives.
Mm.
And it's just like, it's false. It's just, I never connect with it at all. I'm always like, you are just using this dog to emotionally manipulate me. I hate this film already. And I just want this dog to make it to the end. And if he doesn't, I'm going to hate this film even more. And if he does survive, it's going to be like, well, it's false jeopardy. And yeah.
Is it a spoiler to say whether the dog survives or not? Or is that
kind
the entire
of, yeah, it kind
of the
is
film?
A bit. I mean,
okay,
it doesn't
right,
really
don't
matter,
tell us.
To be honest. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, it's fiction. Like.
So, what has everybody got in their glasses?
Okay, so everybody's got a full fizz Spumante Prosecco. And from Marks & Spencer's, obviously. It's technically this one should be a little bit sweeter, but it's obviously on the drier side because I found this quite dry. Prosecco is the Glera grape. It is generally from that cold, breezy bit that comes down from the Alps in the Veneto between the towns of Conegliano Valdobbiadene, which I like saying because they're hard to say.
Yeah.
And although this one isn't quite specific where it comes from, but what makes this different from bog standard Prosecco and the kind of Prosecco served at weddings is that that's usually the cheap stuff that only costs a tenner, whereas the half fizz stuff is only half taxation. This is double taxation because it's a luxury product, because it's full fizz. So this is taxed like champagne.
Oh, right.
But 8 euros versus the about 350 that you'd be putting on a regular bottle of wine. So that's if you see that crown cap and that little cage on top and so on, the mushroom cork, it means it's full fizz, more fizz, and usually drier. But I mean, the Frizzante half fizz stuff is fine too. But you know, this is better in my opinion.
Okay, are you having full fizz or half fizz
at our wedding?
Yeah.
Oh, I have
champagne.
I don't know. I should probably.
Oh, you're not
across. Well.
Is it? Do you have a person who are across?
Do we? I think we need to. We need to have a conversation with, because I think we're going to buy our own wine and bring it in. But so we might. Can we talk after this?
Do.
You've just reminded me. God, I feel like I have a checklist. Yeah.
There you go. Brian will do you a good deal.
Brilliant. Perfect.
So Netflix says cinema is dead. Well, that's a shock.
I mean, yeah. Well, this is. Yeah, Brian's going to get into this. I think Ted Sarandos was speaking at the Time 100 Summit, and like obviously Netflix still hugely successful as a streaming platform, and they're talking about like the state of the landscape of streaming film in general. And he's basically saying that, like, you know, the studios and the theatres, like, they're fighting it out to get the films into this 45-day window. Also saying that, like, filmmakers don't want to make films for cinemas anymore. Now, again, obviously he's going to say this because their model is an at-home model. He wants bums on couches, not in seats in theatres. It's kind of contradictory, though, when it's like, if they want any of their big films to go up in the awards, they have to get a theatrical release. You know, you look at, like, Knives Out or, like, well, Emilia Perez didn't end up going to theatres.
No.
Yeah, thank God. And thank God for that. But it's just so, like... Obviously, I get it because, again, as I said, he needs people at home and he needs people watching at home. But, like, it's a totally different viewing experience to going to see something in a... Like, I kind of think they're not comparable in a way. I think there are being two types of films made at the minute where it's, like, it's full, you know, couch fodder. You don't have to concentrate, whatever. But there's still such a beauty to going to a cinema, being fully concentrated on the thing that's on the big screen. And also, I don't think it's fair to say the filmmakers have no desire to make stuff for the big screen anymore. I think that's the only reason why.
That's a lot.
That's the only reason why filmmakers get involved with making movies. Because they want to see it in a cinema.
100%. Like, I mean, the only reason that people would make a film for Netflix is they couldn't get money anywhere else.
Mm.
That's literally it. Like, no, really, that's the only reason. Like, they go to Sundance, they go to all these film festivals. And generally speaking, Netflix are the ones that have the biggest checkbook and the biggest pocketbook. So they're like, name your price here and we'll take it. And of course, you know, it's so difficult to make films nowadays. You would think, you know, with, you know, how the accessibility of technology and cameras and all the rest of it, you think anyone would be able to do it. But it's quite the opposite, in fact, because, you know, you have to pay actors, you have to pay for, you know, grips, you have to pay for all the technical stuff that goes along with it. You have to pay for editing, you have to pay for, you know, musical clearances and all the rest of it. So there is a big outlay to kind of get it, the production going. And then the producers, the people who put up that money, basically want their money back like that. So they're not going to, like, hash it out with, say, you know, Warner Brothers or Paramount, who'll say, well, you know, maybe we'll put this out and, you know, we'll see how we go. Whereas Netflix are like, no, we need to stock the shelves right now. We will pay you whatever you want, 3 million, 5 million, 7 million. And that'll be on, you know, the Netflix content library within a month. And the producers are like, great, that gets all our money back. We're all happy. We'll take it.
Yeah. And while I'm sure, like most people working in movies, want their work to be seen on a big screen.
Yeah.
From the point of view of consumers, if you have a Netflix account or an Amazon, multiple things, you're sitting there going, well, there's this movie in the cinema right now, but it's raining outside.
Am I arsed?
And I'm already paying for
it
because it'll be on my telly in 3 months' time. It's hard to compete with.
And
that.
Also, cinema etiquette has kind of gone out the window. So
look,
there's kind of no look at the Minecraft film, and I don't understand children anymore, but they're throwing popcorn in the air and stuff like that. And the cinemas are having to be like, can you not throw popcorn in the air? Which seems like an obvious thing. But
I blame the parents.
I know what I mean. And I know it's a meme or whatever, I don't know. But like, again, there's no guarantee that you do go to cinema and you do get that nice experience because, and look, Minecraft is an extreme example, but you have people like they can't get off their phones, they're talking, whatever. And look, Ted Sarandos also made the point that it's like wherever you're living, you might not have access to see a film in a particular window, or like the screenings are sold out or whatever. So then obviously, okay, you are just going to go to your Netflix, or like as you said, wait until it comes to streaming, because you know it will inevitably. So
I mean, the other thing that I don't think is, not to, it's not kind of talked about in this, but like physical sales are coming back in a big way. People don't realize this. Like, I mean, you're actually finding now that like DVD and Blu-rays are selling a lot better than people might expect because, again, you know, like, for example, Conclave, right? I thought Conclave was on Prime Video. It's not now. It just got taken off last week.
Oh.
Yeah, and you would think, Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's on,
really,
but it's on Prime Video UK. If you have a Prime Video UK account, there it is, right there. You can go and rent it, but on the Irish one, for some reason, it's not. And you would think this week of all week would be the week to put Conclave on Prime Video, like. You know,
we actually watched it this week, but we found it on Google or something. I found it. Yeah,
yeah, there's been a massive spike in people.
No.
Like Google. Was it one of those sites where there's lots of lonely women in your area?
No.
They're tragic.
No, it actually will be paid for through the Google app or whatever, you know.
It's gone up like 200% or something, or 283, even from a search perspective, it's mad.
And the IFI are even back screening it again anyway.
Yeah, that's so,
like,
a good idea.
It's a pity they couldn't have the actual Conclave and the film side by side. You'd pay cash money to see that. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break, back in a couple of minutes. Right, so someone's going to make a movie adaptation of a video game. No one's done that before.
What a novel idea, yeah.
Yeah.
The Last of Us continues to break hearts everywhere. So Split Fiction, I don't know if anyone in this room knows it. It's like, it's going to be the game of the year. It came out in March, and it's basically this like co-op game that features basically two authors, and they're kind of working different genres, and the genres come to life, and they get stuck in the worlds that they've written about. So I haven't played it. I actually really want to play it now, but like one of the worlds is like fantasy. I can't remember what the other world is, but yeah, basically came
reality
out of
reality, maybe.
Reality, maybe. Yeah, real life. Who needs fiction when real life is terrible?
And this only came out last month.
Literally last month,
and they're making a movie of it already.
Everywhere, like it's going to be game of the year. Yeah, the adaptation was announced. John M. Chu is directing, so John M. Chu did Wicked, probably most recently and most notably. And so Sydney Sweeney is going to be in one of the two roles of the authors. It hasn't been said which one in terms of who's doing the script. We've got Reese and Paul Wernick, who were the screenwriters from Deadpool and Wolverine, so that kind of, I don't know about that, but yeah, it's all about the games. People are really looking towards more the games for adaptations and stuff like that, so
that's
kind of seems to be the way forward. Yeah,
I don't think we can say anything about The Last of Us without it being majorly spoiled.
No, we can't.
The news.
Moving on.
No, we can't. We can't, because we can't say anything.
Have you been watching it?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. Oh no, it was great. And I mean, that was like your. Yeah. It was like the Red Wedding kind of type.
Episode. Oh, yeah. And if you played the game, you knew it was coming. Like, and you see, still shocked you.
That's what I was wondering about, actually, yeah.
Oh, no, people who've played the game have been insistent on kind of spoiling it for people, or at least heavily hinting about what's to come, so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they've been there before, And the new series of Wednesday is going to be in, or series two of Wednesday is going to be in two parts. Why are they doing
that? Isn't it mad that it's only on season two? It kind of feels like it's been kind of knocking around for ages. Yeah, season two, which was predominantly filmed in Ireland, if not entirely filmed in Ireland, I think it's being split into first batch of episodes are coming to Netflix on August 6th and second batch will be there on September 3rd and it basically follows Wednesday. She's back in the academy but they have a new principal who is Steve Buscemi. So what hijinks will she get up to? Who knows? I'd say we'll get one more series of that before Jenna Ortega's like, right, I'm out of here. I'm too big for this. Yeah. So enjoy it while we have it.
Well, even like these kids who are mad into Wednesday, who probably don't even watch the show because they're a bit too young and it's a bit too scary for them.
It's just kind of like, like the brand association or something, or like the aesthetic of it. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
God, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Right, so what's our second wine, Leslie?
The second wine is Sauvignon Blanc, by far Ireland's most popular grape, but this is the OG Sauvignon Blanc, as in this is where the grape is from. It's from Touraine in the Loire Valley.
Oh.
Touraine, the clue's in the name, around the city of Tours. So that's where we think Sauvignon probably originated. It's also grown in Bordeaux, obviously, in France, but the DNA seems to suggest that it's from here. So the Sauvignon Blancs from the Loire tend to be a little lighter, a little fresher, a little more citrus green apple than the kind of cut grass and kind of passion fruit character you get in New Zealand and the sort of lighter style you get in Chile. These are, so Sancerre is the most famous Sauvignon Blanc, you know, region, but Touraine's would be not unlike that. So this is poor man's Sancerre, you could argue, because certainly no New Zealand wine will ever taste like a Sancerre, so it's a much lighter style. But this is part of the Classics range, which is useful to know because M&S have this range of about 30, 40 wines where they literally pick a famous region and then convince someone to do it for less expensive money. And so this is number 32, and I think our red that's coming is similarly one of the classic range, and it's just a way to explore the original version of these grapes, so the original, you know, the classic style.
Yeah.
But
is the original version widely different now? One would have thought from your new world.
Well, the new world. Well, New Zealand, it's they're sweeter than New Zealand ones. I mean, that's not a bad thing, but you don't notice they're sweeter because there's so much acidity. So there's a lot more light and a lot more. It's not necessarily warm, but it is slightly warm. It's certainly warmer than the Loire. The Loire is quite a cool region. I mean, if you go to the Loire in the summer, I mean, it might not be sunny at all, you know?
Mm.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like you're relatively far north if you think about where the Loire is, whereas New Zealand is much more optimum ripening, and same with most of the New World and so on. I mean, they grow Sauvignon Blanc down the Languedoc, and obviously it ripens really well there, and they try and grow it up a hill so that it's a bit cooler. But the Loire is where you want a slow, clean, long ripening so they retain the acidity and the freshness and so on. So they tend to be lighter. They tend to be cleaner. They tend to be dry, bone dry. And I don't know, there's a leanness about them that I like. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean in a good way. That they're linear. They're clean. They never veer too much into kind of blousiness and roundness.
You know? Oh, yeah, I hate blousiness. Yeah.
Yeah. Blousiness.
Wow.
Yeah, blousiness is a good word. Yeah, it is a word. It is a word in the wine world, yeah.
But you can see bottles wearing little blouses. Yeah, that would be, with the pay extra tax on the blouse.
Oh, yeah, I'd say so, yeah. It depends on how low cut it is, I suppose.
Yeah, the thing about, like, when people think Sauvignon Blanc, they think New Zealand. They don't think France at all.
Yeah, well, probably. In fact, when New Zealand first appeared on the scene, really kind of the London Wine Fair was where the Western world became aware of it in the early 80s. And the French guys were like, what is this? They've taken all the things that we're trying to not do and done them to extreme. I mean, because they did not want that grassiness. They didn't want that cat pee, you know, literally. I mean, and there was a New Zealand wine called Cat Pee on a gooseberry bush. I mean, that was the name of the actual wine, right? I don't know how well it sold, but it was available for a while. Because cat pee sounds like a really unpleasant thing, but weirdly, when you smell it in wine, it you go, oh my God, there's cat pee, and I don't mind the smell of it in my wine. It is a really...
How much of it do you have to have drunk to get to that point?
It's a kind of like an ammonia kind of character that you get. And so New Zealand, So New Zealand is your classic. Look, perfumes do this. The first hit of many famous perfumes is a wall of flowers, but you couldn't live with that all day. So then it dries down into sort of citrus and other things that you can live with. And it's the same with wine. Coca-Cola does it. I mean, it hits you with all that sugar, but then loads of acidity, so that it balances out on the end. And that's what New Zealand is doing. They're hitting you with all that sweetness. And look, it's not. I like New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. It's just a different style. I grew up with the Loire style, pretty much. You know,
yeah.
I preferred that.
Oh, did we? What's for breakfast, like mammy?
I was drinking more French wine than New Zealand wine, is what I mean.
Yeah.
But when this is in the 90s now. God, I'm not that old.
That's like 30 years ago.
I know. It's true.
Sorry, anyway, now. Yeah, right, I know you dropped your hearing aid, so we better take a commercial break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Right, we'll move on to our first movie of the day. It's called The Accountant 2. Here's a clip.
I'd like to have someone check in on.
Yeah?
Yes.
Well, get a dog.
Do you have a dog?
I'm getting a dog. Look at this. Yeah. That's Greg.
Unconvincing.
What do you mean unconvincing? That's Greg. I'm getting this dog.
No, you like the idea of a dog.
Anybody who has a dog likes the idea of getting a dog. It's why they got the dog in the first place.
Do you have a permanent residence?
No.
Anyone to care for your dog during long absence?
I do not.
Do you keep a regular schedule in terms of eating, sleeping?
I don't.
You're a cat person. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, you know something. If I had a cat, at least the cat would miss me.
Doubtful. Possible.
There you go. That's The Accountant 2. Bit of snappy repartee there.
Yes.
So The Accountant 1 is like he's an accountant, but then goes in a murderous rampage. Is that
kind of? Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
So essentially, what's happening is Ben Affleck plays this character who is an accountant for various nefarious criminals along the way. So, like, you know, he helped, you know, sort out the books for the Sinaloa cartel. He worked for the Yakuza when they were worried about loss prevention and stuff like that. But on top of that as well, he is autistic. So he basically is a little bit of a misfit. You know, he's not able to kind of sort of have the sort of the normal repartee with people that, you know, you would expect a sort of suave action figure kind of character like this. Whereas his brother, John Bernthal, who you saw there, is very much the sort of, like, you know, good with the ladies, always has a snappy kind of one-liner and all the rest of it, and can kick the crap out of anyone that looks at him sideways. So this film basically takes place 8 years after the first one. J.K. Simmons, who people would know from Whiplash, was sort of like this federal agent who was working with Ben Affleck's character. At the start of the film, and I'm not giving this away because it's in all the trailers, he gets killed, and before he dies, he writes on his arm, "Find the accountant." And then there's a sort of a puzzle about, you know, what was he investigating, what actually happened, why was he shot dead, and all the rest of it. And John Bernthal, Ben Affleck, have to figure out what happened and why he was listening. I mean this in the most complimentary way possible. This is an airplane film, which is to say, I mean this in the most complimentary way possible, which is you will enjoy it for 2 hours, you'll have a great time watching it, you will depart the plane, or you'll walk out the cinema, or you'll turn it off Amazon Prime, and you will forget about it. But for those 2 hours, you're locked in and you're enjoying it. It's really smart, it's really well made. Ben Affleck and John Bernthal have great dynamic together. The director, Gavin O'Connor, knows how to put together an action set piece. It's funny. I mean, they really do get the brother dynamic very well, because John Bernthal is able to kind of just push the buttons of Ben Affleck's character. And anyone that has a brother will know that that is
what they do. Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And it's just like, stop doing that. Please stop doing that. Why are you doing that? Please stop doing that. Why are you touching that? Stop touching that. Jesus Christ. You know? And my brother is listening right now, and I know he's going to text me in 5 minutes and saying, shut up about it. Like, yeah. But he does that. He does that all the time, and he just knows how to push my button, and it just thinks, please stop. Why are you doing that? Please stop.
Brian comes here for therapy.
Sorry, I'm reliving like nearly 40 years of it, and it's like, just stop touching that.
There was talk about a dog there. Did the dog die?
The dog doesn't come into it. No, the dog doesn't come into it, thank God. But it's a lovely corgi as well. But this is enjoyable. This is fine. This is like a 3-star film. This is like, don't go into this with any kind of preconceived notions. Enjoy it for what it is. It's a potboiler. Remember those? Basically, like, everyone gets together. It's not a work of art. It's a work of craft. Everyone knows what they're doing, and it's enjoyable.
Yeah. Does John Bernthal essentially play the same person?
Pretty much.
Yeah. He's the Punisher, but, you know, with varying degrees of violence.
Varying degrees of angstiness going along the way. Like, yeah, like this, he's at a 2. He goes to the Punisher, he's at about a 5 or a 6. You know, that sort of... But then he does the podcast, he's between 1 and a 7. Like, you know, that sort of way. Like, but, like, he knows what he's doing. Like, in the same way that, like, you know, no one kind of gives Jeff Goldblum any guff for being literally the same character in every
that's
single
true.
Film that
yeah,
he does. Like,
that's a good
like,
point.
Like, he does it and he does it well. So, yeah. Like, why make an issue of it? Like, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So it's in cinemas now, is it?
It's in cinemas right now.
Yeah. And in a streamer in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, no. Beyond it, literally, no, I'm not kidding. It'll be on Prime Video, I'd say, in the next 30 days. Not kidding. Because they, it's like, they, that's what Prime Video are doing now. They basically, they own MGM. So they'll basically put these films into cinemas for like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe. And then, month's time, then you'll see it on Prime Video and you'll rent it or stream it.
Yeah, okay. So they're going to make a drama about Jonestown.
That's yeah.
Not a comedy then.
No. Bill Hader will be working on this, more commonly known for comedy, but yeah, he's working on it. It's coming to HBO for
an
adult.
He does look like Jim Jones.
Yeah, he kind of does actually, yeah.
Will the Kool-Aid Man appear?
Well, that's what I was about to say. Leave it with me. So yeah, this is obviously talking about the 1978 massacre, more than 900 members of this cult led by Jim Jones. Hader's directing. He could star in it, but that's not confirmed, but he probably is, as we've just deduced, because they look very similar.
He looks very similar, yeah.
The reason why this timing is kind of interesting, is anyone watching The Studio on Apple TV Plus?
Yes.
Yeah.
So good.
Everyone should be watching it. It's very good. I am about to spoil it, essentially the first episode, but it's fine. You can just jump right in. Basically, The Studio is about this studio in Hollywood. Seth Rogen is kind of looking to like take it over because people leave or whatever, but his boss Bryan Cranston is basically like, okay, you know, no, Seth Rogen is a movie guy, he wants to make like proper movies, he loves like Scorsese and everything like that, he's indebted to them, but Bryan Cranston is his boss and he's like, we need to look at Barbie, we need to be looking at like existing IP, we're gonna make a movie about the Kool-Aid Man. And Seth Rogen's like, okay, but he manages to get this meeting with Martin Scorsese, and Martin Scorsese has this idea about doing a film about the Jonestown Massacre. So Seth Rogen is essentially like, okay, cool, we'll let you do this movie, but doesn't mention the fact that it's going to have to be, he's going to have to shoehorn in that it's about essentially Kool-Aid. The Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah.
So this like post about the Jonestown series with Bill Hader goes up and all the comments are like, okay, cool, so is the Kool-Aid Man going to be in this or what? Because otherwise I'm not watching it. So remains to be seen.
Yeah.
Watch The Studio. Okay,
that's a good point.
I don't know if I sold it, but watch it. It's very
Martin Scorsese is very funny in it.
Martin Scorsese is so funny in it. He's incredible. So
and
good.
Steve Buscemi as well. Like, people forget. Like, he's a very gifted comedic actor. Like, people forget him in, like, 30 Rock. Like,
yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. Like,
how do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah, how do you do, fellow kids? And, like, his wet eyes that he just, like, blinks every now and then.
It's very it's very movie-y, but, like, I kind of avoided it because I thought it would be a bit up its own, you know, whatever. But it's not. It's funny. It's good.
Yeah.
The second episode was my favourite.
Yeah.
The Warner.
Oh, yeah. The Warner as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, where they make a one, yeah, this one shot through the movie, and it's and the episode is shot like that. Yeah, it's very
Catherine O'Hara also brilliant in it.
Yes.
And also brilliant. In The Last of Us,
and Catherine Han.
Yes, and Catherine Han. Yeah, incredible. So
right, we do have a lot more to get to, but we'll take a break right now. Back in a couple of minutes. Tell us about the red wine.
Okay, so we are drinking Malbec from Argentina. And so this is not the OG, in that Malbec is originally from southwestern France, from Bordeaux, from Cahors, from that sort of southwestern part of France. But to be honest, these days, you ask Malbec where its most classical expression is, it's Argentina.
Yeah.
The Cahors is actually quite a small region these days. And the wines can still be very good, and there are some interesting producers there, but they tend to be a little bit more rustic and some, well, they can be, but they can also be quite elegant and stuff. But it's really Argentina. And so the key here is warm days, cold nights. So the grapes get really, really ripe in the day, and then at nighttime they retain their acidity and their freshness. So you get lovely, juicy, black plum fruits that are in this, and then a freshness at the end. And they just do it better than anywhere. And at this stage, a lot of Cahors producers have actually brought in Argentinian winemakers.
It's gone the other way. Oh, that must be humiliating for them.
I think, yeah. And clones, and they're actually replanting on Argentinian clones, because inevitably a grape variety will develop in a country, and you know, cuttings will be made and so on, and you know, better producing ones, richer ones will come out, and then the they may be more interesting, and so they're actually sometimes re-grubbing up the old Cahors vineyards and replanting on Argentinian versions of the Malbec grape.
They were in Cahors, but they wouldn't have the altitude they have in.
No, they wouldn't. And so it has a different character. But yeah. Look, having said that, you know, Chateau de Cedre, there's plenty of really interesting Cahors ones. I'm pretty sure actually Mark Smith does actually have a Cahors in this classics range, which is what this is. I certainly seem to remember that they did.
Yeah.
So it is worth exploring. And northern Bordeaux. So if you arrive into Bordeaux at the top of the region, you will get Malbec grown in the grapes, and it is one of the five classic red grapes of Bordeaux.
But your Argentinian Malbec, does it vary? Is it better the higher up you go?
It can be, and some of them are in limestone soils, which are different. They're similar. I mean, Mendoza is the province, but the Uco Valley does taste different to. Some of the other, I won't go into the different valleys, but yeah, you will get some difference. You'll get more mintiness in some. Some are literally 3,000 meters above sea level. I mean, that's massive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really high up. But they're still able to ripen the grapes because of the warm days and so on. It's a really interesting region, Argentina. God loves, they need a few quid, the Argentinians, but their economy keeps going up and down and so on. I know their new guy's doing his best and so on, but really, and Argentinian cinema is really interesting as well. I mean, I'd be a big fan of Argentina. We've loads of Irish out there. We support Argentina, you know?
That's right, yeah. There's historical links there. Yeah, there are indeed. Yeah.
I watched Settlers, though, if you saw that, Brian.
Yeah,
amazing,
amazing. Dark.
Dark, dark.
But, like, I remember when I was there in Argentina a couple of years ago from honeymoon, like, and like the amount of people that were like, the minute you said Irish, like, oh, San Patricio, and like, there's like, they're like naval academy, and like
set up an Irish family. Yeah, and they do have their own newspaper. There's a little kind of comes out once a month for Irish Argentinian community.
And we should, you know, they're all great grandfathers, but we should give them grandfather status. We need a bit of injection of that Argentinian into the.
No, but your Malbec, though, you really only have to have a Malbec with a big lump of steak.
It is from a
cow you killed yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
With your bare hands.
You didn't cook it very often. No, it's true. It really is good for that. And it's bank holiday weekend, next weekend, barbecue season, you know, roses and Malbecs. That's what I'd be suggesting people drink, you know. There's lovely ripe black fruit flavors, and there's a reason. I mean, I often, if you're stuck, what's going to match my food, what wine, think about what's the region. If it's a European region, try and think of the wine that the locals would drink. And what does Argentina make a lot of steaks? So therefore, they would get a lot of Malbec. You know?
Yeah, very nice steaks as well. Hopefully, if it stops raining, that might be one to eat outdoors. They're going to have a prequel to the Hunger Games.
It's actually the second prequel to the Hunger Games.
This is like the slightly peckish game.
You're up to speed.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
This is the Hunger Games, Sunrise and the Reaping. The book actually came out again earlier this year, I think, from Suzanne Collins. And basically, it focuses on Haymitch Abernathy, which if you watch the original franchise, he was Katniss's mentor, essentially. He's played by Woody Harrelson in the movies, again, if you didn't read the books. So they've cast young Haymitch. It's Joseph Zada is going to play young Haymitch, because this one focuses on him. I think it's set 24 years before Katniss ever exists or whatever, before she goes into the arena. Yeah, exactly. So she's playing Haymitch, and then his girlfriend, Lenora Dove Bard, is being played by Whitney Peake, relative newcomers. So exciting if you're into the franchise. Though I will say that the previous one that I have mentioned, the other prequel that came out, Ballads of Songbirds and Snakes with Rachel Zegler, like, that obviously made him into the box office.
Yeah,
so this
will
probably be the same. Even with this book, there seemed to be a lot of hype around it, and the fans are really into it. So.
Okay. But is this prequel a prequel to the prequel, or does it come after the prequel?
So sorry.
After the prequel. Yeah.
Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes is first. Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure it explains how, like, President Snow became to be evil. None of these are spoilers. The books are sold and are the movies. So that's Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. This is Sunrise on the Reaping, which is Haymitch's story. And then it's, like, The Hunger Games, if we're looking at it chronologically. And where people, this is for the people in the Sugar Club, people listening can't see what I'm doing with my hands, but I'm doing them kind of
chronologically. No, it's much clearer if you had the hands. Anyone listening?
Yeah, perfect.
Be totally confused.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I see. Why did they do it in that order? You think they would have done?
It's like Star Wars.
Well, it's just and like, maybe was there? I don't know. The Hunger Games really set off in a way that maybe wasn't anticipated? So.
Yeah.
Just now going back and making
But I'm probably totally wrong here, but I kind of get the sense of Hunger Games was of its time.
Yes and no. Like the one that everyone kind of compared it to was Battle Royale, which was this Japanese film in the 90s that did really, really well. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong now, but the fact that like America is basically descending into fascism at the minute, it's like, oh, this is really relevant.
Yeah, correct him if he's wrong there, Fionnuala.
But like, you know what I'm saying? No, but I'm saying like, as in like, it has relevance again.
Yeah. You even have, yeah, I'm seeing people even on TikTok, you know, where you're seeing these like kind of outrageous displays of wealth, and you'll see people commenting being like, oh, commenting from District 12. District 12 was the poor, the impoverished district in the Hunger Games. So like, there is still a lot of relevance, like.
Yeah, though, I don't know. Do we need some sort of sci-fi fantasy allegory to tell us what's going on in the United States?
Well, there's that as well.
Turn on your television, kids.
Yeah, I think people are just obsessed with the Haymitch character because it was like, obviously, he was involved in the games, and as his mentor, with his mentorship to Katniss, like, he didn't want to be involved in it, and he descended into alcoholism and stuff like that. I think there's, as someone who, I still haven't read this book, but I think there's a lot to unpack there. I will be going to see the film. It's out November 20th, 2026, as of right now, and it's Francis Lawrence is directing, and he's really done all of them, I think, since Catching Fire, so like save pair of hands.
Okay, right. Okay, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is The Friend. Here's the clip.
Iris, I need to talk with you. It's about the dog. I wanted to ask if you could take him.
No, I can't. No.
This is what Walter wanted after he died.
Why would he say that?
You were his best friend.
At the top of the hill, between the two bridges, silhouetted against the limpid sky.
You're making this up.
I could have a point, but the fact is, the dog magically appeared.
He can't stay. Management company, they are very strict.
Not a problem. I'm working on it. Just a few days.
Bad dog.
That's just great.
How's the book going? There's considerable interest, and we've got to capitalize on it now.
Just can't keep having him here. It's taken over my bed. And it's getting in the way of my work.
I don't think it's about the dog.
He's in mourning. He lost his master.
How would you feel?
Right, there you go. There's the friend, and the friend is actually the dog.
Is the dog, right. Yeah. Now, do you know in films about films and they show like fake trailers? That looked exactly like a fake trailer to me. I heard it there and I was like, that just sounds like a generic drama trailer. Mm. Even with the little upbeat music and like, bad dog. So this is based on not against the dog. Like, I love dogs and Great Danes are great. I mean, fantastic. Scooby-Doo. Like, the problem. Okay, so there's two things, right? First of all, this is based on Sigrid Nunes's novel of the same name, and there was a film out last year called The Room Next Door. People will remember with Tilda Swinton and Julianne Moore, directed by Pedro Almodovar. This was his first English language film. That's brilliant. That's a really good film. It's so well done. It's beautiful. It's a really kind of rich exploration of like grief and what does it mean to be friends and all that kind of stuff. This, on the other hand, is like basically they took that film, put it into ChatGPT, and then it just got came out the other side, and it's just like all been sanded down and generic, and the sentences are a little bit smaller, and it's just all like has lost any of the kind of depth. And like, and again, look, hold on a second. I love dogs. Fionnuala will attest to this.
It's not the dog's fault.
It's not the
dog's
fault.
No one's blaming the dog.
It's not the dog's fault.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Not the fake dog noises.
It's not the fake dog.
The dog can only work with the script the dog was given, really.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and like, you know, it's not that this film is terrible, because it isn't. And it's not that it's great either, because it isn't. It's just so aggressively bleh. You know that kind of way? Like, you could watch it and you're not, and nothing is sinking in. You're not getting any of it. And like, there's a great cast there. Like, you saw, like, you have Naomi Watts and Bill Murray, and you're thinking, great, there's something here. There's got to be something here. And there isn't. Like, and I think part of it, the reason is that, number one, the directors are this guy called Scott McGee and David Siegel. They've done nothing that anyone would know. Like, I'd say the biggest film they did was this thing called What Maisie Knew, which was an adaptation of a Henry James novel.
Yeah.
Nobody saw it. And it's just, it's a great example of give a good, you know, the same kind of story, the same kind of source material in the hands of a great director like Pedro Almodovar, you get greatness. You give it to a couple of hacks, you're getting this. And that's what this is. It's just the work of two hacks.
Okay. So, I think we know how you feel about that, right? Thank you very much.
Am I getting it? Is it making clear? I think you're making it clear.
Yeah, okay. That's a lot, I'm afraid. Thanks to Leslie and Brian and Fionnuala. Thanks to everybody here in the Sugar Club as ever. They're always so good. our production team today, Una Neemwell Downey, Simon Tierney, Michael Gilligan, Niamh Hamill, Aidan McKelvey, Jack Lawler, David Slevin, and Ben Griffin.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Spring is in bloom, and so are casino thrills at BetMGM Casino. Play your favorite games like blackjack and roulette with a live dealer. Or check out our exclusive slots like MGM Grand Millions and The Wizard of Oz Over the Rainbow. Only available at BetMGM Casino. Spin on spectacular slot favorites like Cash Eruption, 88 Fortunes, Mystery of the Lamp, Rake and Bacon, Cash Machine, Flintstones, and Squid Game from anywhere. Whether you're taking a walk or waiting for your train to come, you can enjoy the thrills of BetMGM Casino right from the palm of your hand. Download the BetMGM Casino app today and get a piece of the action. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. BetMGM.com for full terms. Games may vary by state. 21 years of age or older to wager. Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.